This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. The Nagus. Hello and welcome to episode 83 of TL Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and joining me tonight is someone who, if it was remotely possible for Quark to be elevated to the position of Grand Nagus, even if only for an hour or so, still wouldn't be worthy enough to make my coffee. And it's my good friend, Dave. Hello, Dave.
Wow. Hi, Yannick. In life in general, it's always good to know your place.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
How are you doing, sir?
I am fine, thank you. We had good weather for 2 days, and now we're going to have like 7 days of rain. I don't know what we did.
Deserve
the wrath of the power upside. But other than that, I am absolutely fine. And we're recording this podcast. So how can it go better than that?
Well, then you invite me and that ruins everything.
I was going to say that's kind of top of the quality of the show. We have our friend Nate, who's back for third, fourth, fifth, something like that. Back again for... to record an episode with us. Good evening, Nate, or good afternoon, I should say.
Either will do.
How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Home projects are actually going like to pace, and so it looks like I will actually meet all my deadlines. Like, this is really nice. Weird. Usually things get messed up, and there's a cascade of failures and whatnot. But things are actually working out all right. So this is really strange for me.
Sorry, meeting deadlines.
I know it's really. This is really bizarre for me, actually.
You're doing it wrong.
I am. I must be.
Mm. Yeah. Unless you have planned for the delays in case, it's okay.
Well, it must be the Grand Nagus smiling on me right now. That must be what's going on.
Must be. Yes, it must be. Talking about the Grand Nagus, that's tonight's episode. We're going to review Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1 Episode 11, The Nagus. And then we're going to talk about the episode with Nate. So... guys, if you are ready, let's begin with our review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 11, The Nagus. So, in the teaser, an airlock door opens and a Ferengi, Krax, steps out and looks around carefully. Once satisfied, he gestures and a hunched-over obscured figure, Zek, emerges, leaning on a taller humanoid, Meardu. In his other hand, he clutches a staff with a golden Ferengi head. Now, am I the only one who thinks that golden Ferengi head looks a lot like Yogurt from Spaceballs, the movie? Don't know if you guys have seen this movie. It's a Mel Brooks movie. And every time I see that, I see Yogurt. So you're going to have to go and watch that movie, Dave, and then tell me if that doesn't look
like... It's a Mel Brooks film, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not a fan of Mel Brooks. Never have been.
I'm a big fan of Spaceballs, so I've watched it like a gazillion times.
I think it's funny because, well, it makes fun of Star Wars, and that's funny.
Yeah.
As I said that on a Star Trek podcast.
Well, it makes fun of science fiction and space
in general,
operas in general, but it's really easy, Star Wars oriented, it's true. Lenny in our Twitch chat says she loves Spaceball. So, hello, Lenny, first things. And yes, it's a good movie. In Commodore Sisko's quarter, Jack is getting ready for school, gathering his many pads, when his father enters. Sisko informs his son that they're going to Bajor for the Gratitude Festival. After the festival, Sisko suggests visiting the fire caverns that Jack had wanted to see. They'll be leaving at the end of that day's school day and going for 3 days. Jack asks if he has to go because he and Nog have plans for the next day.
How many pads does one child need?
Yeah.
Yes, lots. Enough to drop on the ground as he stands up.
Yeah, because we see it again a bit later on when a particular person is, like, building a tower of... and, you know, one tablet to rule them all? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, they have different competing contractors for it, so they're trying different, you know... Because LG, and then you have Samsung, and then you have, you know, Lenovo.
Oh, sorry, he's got all the, like, the demo models.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, they're on the edge of space, essentially, right? So they're going to have, you know, experimental stuff, you know, probably the things that they don't have time for on a Starship.
That's reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Now, what's the point of synthesizing a full glass of orange juice to drink one sip and leave the glass on the table, you know, 10 feet from the replicator?
Why not? Because you can.
Yeah, talk about, you know, not wasting resources.
They can put the glass back in there and it'll turn it back into, you know, particles, right? Is that how it works?
That's the theory we had.
Theory, but, yes.
Yeah.
So what if you leave your hand in there while it's happening? Will it take your hand also? It seems like that's very hazardous. Isn't it there should be a door before you, you know, close it?
That's a good question.
Mm. Like the ones in Enterprise? Yeah, Enterprise had some sliding glass doors.
Yeah. Seems reasonable.
Yeah. It's like a microwave. I mean, you wouldn't let the microwave open. But yeah.
No? I'm doing it wrong.
I like to stare at it with the door open.
Yeah.
Now, here's a funny one. My quote of the week is actually in this first scene.
Ah.
You won't believe it. During that exchange between Jake and Sisko when they're talking about them going for a trip to Bajor. And Sisko says, "You'd rather hang around a cargo bay with Nog than visit the Bajoran fire caverns with the old man." And Jake just pauses and then says, "Nog's my friend." I'm like, sick burn, dude.
Well, he's 14 or something like that, right? That's what his age was. So, you know, I guess that's the age when you start. I don't really remember. It's been too long, I suppose. But I know it's the teenage years when you start to kind of pull away from mom and pop.
Yeah.
The independence.
Well, actually, just to bring this into the real world for a second, we're going out as a family tomorrow because we're all off work and school. Yet my daughter, who has literally just turned 14, would rather go off with her friends than come out with the family. So
there
actually,
you go.
This is life imitating art, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
Of course she would rather go with her friends.
Oh, do you want to hang around with dad? How uncool.
I wonder how long can you get away with the shenanigans, like with the kids? How long can you get away with the different dad things you do before they're like, "All right, that's enough. Stop it, old man."
In his bar, Quark is dealing with a customer and sends her on her way. When she's gone, he grabs Rom by the lobes and questions him as to why he had returned her purse against the first rule of acquisition, and insists that Rom polish every rail in the bar that night. Poor Rom. I was, you know, when Quark was giving drink and was talking to that lady, I was, what's he doing? Why is he offering drinks? There's something wrong. Rom runs off to find Nog, who is building a tower out of pads and knocks them over accidentally when his father arrives. Rom insists that Nog polish all the rails in the bar that night. Nog sighs and heads off to school. That's uncool. You don't do that. You don't give your children your chores.
That is so Ferengi, though, is it not?
It is.
It is.
Someone gives you a punishment, which you then pass on to somebody else.
Right. Where they, as the idiom, poo only rolls downhill.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, Quark is telling Morn and some other customers a joke about an Andorian and someone's wife. Just after the finish of the joke, Krax, Zek, and Meardu enter the bar looking for Quark. Krax then introduces his father, Zek, as the Grand Nagus. Quark and Rom move to kiss Zek's staff and ask if they are visiting on business or pleasure. And of course, to a Ferengi, there is no difference between the two. Krax demands the use of a holosuite from Quark for his father and takes Quark's 5 favorite programs for use there. Quark didn't seem very happy about that.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah, don't offer a selection of 5, because you will lose 5, basically. Yes. Yeah.
It's the first time we saw someone who intimated Quark in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if you see what I mean. I mean, we've seen Quark scared, afraid, but not like that. The first time I saw the episode, I was wondering, is that like the king of the Ferengi or something? Seems to be someone of great importance, although we don't know yet.
I don't know what his position in society would be if you were trying to equate it to something that we would recognize. I was thinking he could be a mayor or maybe an emperor or something. I don't know. It's a difficult one to equate.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the first time we heard Zek speak, and yes. I recognized the voice immediately. I believe you two did as well, but for completely different reasons. For me, well, it was Wallace Shawn was the actor. For me, he played John Sturgis in Young Sheldon. That's where I know him from.
Oh, okay. I haven't watched Young Sheldon, so that's where I've been. Yeah.
For me, he played in The Princess Bride, Vicini, I think is what his name was on there. And he would always say, "Inconceivable!" And it made me laugh every time. So, in that same
voice.
That
was really good. Although there's only one of a short step between what you just did and Sylvester.
Inconceivable!
Oh, of course, yes. A little more spitting.
Yep.
Better sanitize that. Well, you're probably the only one that breathes into that, so who cares?
Yeah. I have other bonnets, anyway.
Look at that.
Okay, on to Act 1. In the classroom at the school, the students are still sitting around talking loudly with no sign of their teacher, Keiko O'Brien, in sight. Her husband, Miles, rushes in as their substitute teacher, but only for another 2 weeks before Keiko is due to return from Earth. The older students had a homework assignment to write an essay on ethics. Nog is chosen to present his first, but claims that his pad has been stolen by some Vulcans in Quarks.
Sure, it was stolen by Vulcans, sure.
Yes, sure, yes.
Because of a lack of ethics. I mean, yes. Come on. If you're talking about any group of individuals with no ethics, Vulcans isn't at the top of the list.
You don't know. Maybe there's one black sheep.
One bad Vulcan.
One bad Vulcan. No, look, he was there. He stole his pad.
Spock's brother.
Yeah, it could be.
Wouldn't the Vulcan be in Starfleet or something? So I can't imagine a Vulcan that made it through would be... Well, yeah, maybe it could have been just a stray Vulcan, you know? Just a rando Vulcan on some sort of a transport, I suppose. Maybe it wasn't a Vulcan at all. Maybe it was a Romulan.
Oh, this guy is a Vulcan.
Right.
Because that's never been done before, has it?
No. Never. Can't tell them apart.
No.
Can tell them apart.
I don't know. Romulans look a bit more shifty. Do you not think? Shifty, yeah.
It's the way they carry themselves.
Right.
Nog gets Jake to corroborate his story, and O'Brien lets Nog hand his essay the following day. He didn't look very convinced, Miles. I guess he'll just let that one go for the sake of not arguing with Nog.
Nah, see, I read that completely differently.
Okay.
I think up until the point where Jake... Well, first of all, Jake said, yeah, sure.
I guess.
Which Miles just didn't go with at all. And so he seemed very suspicious up to that point. But the moment that Jake actually said, yes, he was with me, Miles was like, oh, okay then. Just hand it in tomorrow. So it's like he fell for it at the last moment, which is just really weird.
I think he just didn't want to deal with it. It's like, he's got a lot of things on his plate. Just like, I just want to deal with it. Okay, hand in tomorrow. Mm. At least that was my guess. I could be wrong.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I thought he was not, you know, not convinced and just didn't want to argue. But in Quarks, Quark and Krax watch the holosuites, and Quark wonders how much longer the Grand Nagus would be. Quark suggests they should check on Zek in case he has somehow injured himself, but Krax strongly disagrees, as Zek left orders not to be disturbed. Quark wanders down the bar to where Rom is standing, thrilled to have the Grand Nagus there. But Quark points out that Zek is likely there to purchase the bar for a price far lower than it is worth. Meanwhile, Zek has emerged from his holosuite and proclaims it to have been a good program. Quark offers up Rom's quarter for the Nagus's use while he is at the station and then invites him to dinner at the Nagus's request.
Airs and graces. He's having to think very, very quick on his feet at this moment in time. You could almost see his brain change direction when he said, I would be happy to offer you my brother's quarters.
Yes.
That was funny.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun to see how they'll sell each other out so quickly, the Ferengi. They have, like, yes. No loyalty whatsoever.
No. Absolutely none. As long as, you know, he can make a profit, that's it. You're done. You can be family if you want. You're done.
It's very short-term benefit. They're very, like, short-term thinking benefits is what they are.
Yes.
Yeah. But when a Ferengi deals with another Ferengi, is it easy because they know exactly what they're like? Or is it difficult because they know exactly what they're like? Obviously, you can't trust a Ferengi. Ferengis don't trust Ferengi.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit of both, really. Like, they know what they're dealing with. I guess
they have all those rules of acquisitions, you know, to deal. So it's something other cultures may not adhere to, you know, but Ferengis will. So in a way, they're kind of predictable, you know, just by following the code.
Well, they have more rules than Gibbs does, by the looks of it.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. Although Lenny can tell us how many rules Gibbs has, but he's got a lot. He had a lot. The series is finished, I think.
Well, it looks as though 299 is the highest rule number that we're aware of. Although, unfortunately, they do have a catch-all rule that says, when no appropriate rule applies, make one up.
It's like, a catch-all. You
know, yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. Lenny says Gibbs has 91 rules.
So, 91. Yeah.
So the Ferengi's got...
Well, I'm not going to count them, but it's close.
Yeah. Especially if you can make up one rule when you need it, so...
Right.
I wonder what the process is for getting those rules added. Like, what is the vetting process? How do they deliberate for those rule additions or subtractions? I imagine rules have changed over the course of the existence of the Ferengi, so I wonder what the political process is for that. To get them to agree on their rules.
Yeah. That's an interesting question. How do they do that?
There is a mention here about the Ferengi government debating amendments to the rules.
Oh.
So it looks as though you can't just, you know, scribble your own underneath.
Sisko approaches O'Brien and asks how school is. The chief mentions that he can't wait for Keiko to get back. O'Brien suggests that Sisko find another friend for Jake, one besides Nog, who seems to be a bad influence. Sisko appreciates the advice, but points out that if Jake was forced to choose between his friend and his father, he likely would choose his friend. When O'Brien expresses doubt at this, Sisko suggests that O'Brien will understand when his own daughter is 14. So yeah, I guess, as you said, Dev, that's a very real possibility.
Yeah, it is. Slight anachronism in that scene.
Really?
Because the suggestion was that Miles and Keiko's daughter is 3. But in the Next Generation chronology, mm-hmm. their daughter was born a year and a half ago, 18 months ago.
Just a year prior to...
Oops.
Okay. Maybe.
Well, you know, they are traveling through space, so it may have an effect on how quickly somebody ages. We don't know how that works.
Well, they're on Bajoran days, so 26 hours in a day.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think that they solve the relativity problem by then. You know, otherwise...
You'd think so, yes.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to travel faster than light, but then when you arrive, everyone's dead, so...
Oh, that's interesting, because Miles and Keiko went to Earth to celebrate her mum's 100th birthday.
Yes.
Maybe she was only 80 then.
I don't know. At dinner, Zek enjoys the tube grubs and informs Quark that his cousin Barbo has been released from the Tarahong Detention Center. Zek is quite impressed with their sale of defective warp cores to the Tarahong government. He also brings up how Quark had left Barbo to rot behind bars while Quark kept all the profits, to which Quark quotes the 6th rule of acquisition. I think it's never let a family member get between you and profit. I think that's
pretty much
the rule. Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, nice.
Such a loving rule.
Zek compliments Quark on his brilliance at opening a bar so close to a stable wormhole. Nog brings over a tray of instruments, and Zek chooses one to pick his teeth with.
Yum.
Yeah, yum. Nog asks if he could go to do his homework, to which Crax points out, to his father's disappointment, that a human female is teaching at the Federation school on the station, and Rom tells his son that he will not be attending school anymore. That was a quick reaction from Rom. I wonder if he... Well, it was already not too keen about the school, but I think it's an opportunistic reaction. And when he saw that the Nagus was not really pleased with that, he just decided that that's it. You will never go to the school again.
Yeah, so thinking very quickly on his feet, he didn't want to look bad in front of the Nagus.
Yeah.
But if you take it back to the beginning of the season, Rom was very much against Nog going to the school in the first place. So it's kind of really it's convenient to turn out that way because he saves his face by looking good in front of the Nagus and pulls his son out of school at the same time. So win-win.
Seems like it could have been more of a slippery, conniving answer than that, though. You know, something like... Well, doing infiltration into their education system so we can, you know, something like that. He could have done better.
Yeah, he could.
Information gathering.
Although maybe Quark could have. I don't know if Rom is not the brightest.
He's not. He's not the quickest.
No. Zek tells Quark that he needs his bar and his services to host a Ferengi conference to discuss business in the Gamma Quadrant. And you could see...
You saw his face drop.
Quark's face when Nagi said, I need your bar. What? No.
Yeah, because he's worried that he's going to buy it.
Well, that was his fear, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We are on Act 2. In Ops, Major Kira informs Sisko that the Ferengi ship Sepulo is docking at B5. The 3rd Ferengi ship in the last 18 hours. Dax suggests that it might be Quark's birthday. Sisko contacts Odo to ensure that the situation will be looked after. And I liked the response from Odo. I am already on it. Of course he is.
They're such good friends, so.
Yeah. And he's always keeping an eye on Quark. So. He probably wouldn't have let that go. In Quark's, none of the regular patrons are around, and the double tables have been replaced with a large conference table. Crax informs Quark that the seating had to be changed to separate rivals Turot and Ux. Meanwhile, Morn arrives at the bar, and Quark sends him away since the bar is closed for the impending conference. He did send him away, not very politely. He's like, go away, move.
And then opens the door and pushes him out.
Yeah, poor Morn.
When Crax spotted him, Morn was, he was stood in the doorway, just like, ugh.
Yeah, well.
And he was just stood there, not moving, not anything. And it took ages for Crax to realize he was there.
Well, probably Morn was surprised to see the changes in the bar.
Mm.
Yeah. He would have expressed his astonishment if he could.
Yes.
Well, it's supposed to talk. It's just not speaking, you know, when he's on screen.
And how can we never see Morn's ship? Obviously, he has some kind of a ship, right? He's a cargo.
It's because he lives there.
Yeah.
For but doesn't he haul cargo? Or maybe he's just like a logistician or something like that.
I don't remember.
What's his job? He's got to have a job.
Yeah. He is a courier.
I just think it's funny, and I think you already said this, but like he never talks. We don't know what he sounds like, but they say he's so talkative.
Yeah.
That's, but he never talks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But never on screen.
Yeah. Well, you know how Morn is. He just talks all the time. Like
even says there he has a reputation of being sociable and highly talkative.
Yeah.
You just never see it.
No.
It's one of those jokes, the running joke of Star Trek, of Deep Space Nine.
I mean, I totally approve of that. I think that's a fantastic way to joke about that.
Graal, one of the other Ferengi, threatens to leave when the Grand Nagus enters, supported by Meardu. Rom and Nog leave, but Zek tells Squawk to stay. And he was surprised.
Yes.
Was he surprised or was he honored?
No, I think he was surprised.
Yeah,
I think. Because I think he was actually in the process of walking out when Zek told him that he was supposed to stay there. And he was like,
what?
Because if you think about the people that are around that table, we don't necessarily know who they are, but they certainly have a much more senior or superior bearing than Quark. So why would Quark be in this room around this table of, for all we know, dignitaries with the Grand Nagus at the head of the table?
Yeah.
That's no place for Quark.
I agree. Really,
if you're honest.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even have a ship. He's got like a little cargo, a little shuttlecraft. Doesn't have a ship.
I don't think so. Well, he may very well have stolen one.
Well, like the Ferengi ship in TNG was just such an amazing looking ship, and then you rarely ever see that ship again in DS9.
Yeah, but to be fair, DS9 is a show. You know, it's like Babylon 5. It happens on the station. It's that the station is the main place, so you don't see that many ships. Except at the end of the series, but at the beginning, there's a lot of action on the station.
It is interesting when you say about Quark not having a ship. I've never seen the staff car park, have you?
No.
You would think that there'd be something, right? There'd be some people who...
Why would you need one? Because anybody who's been there will arrive via some kind of ship, either a shuttle or a transport service. When you're there, you don't need transport because you could just nick a runabout or, like Bashir did last week, or get another ship that's going somewhere else in that direction. You wouldn't necessarily have your own method of transport parked up on the edge of the docking ring just in case, would you?
Well, I don't know. It depends on what your job entails. I mean, I have a vehicle, so even though I have a house, I still have a vehicle in case I got to go out and get something, you know? It seems like you'd...
Yeah, but you would probably not get off Deep Space Nine just, you know, to go and buy a loaf of bread. You know what I mean?
You never know. They might have better bread on Bajor.
True, but then that's probably... If there's better bread on Bajor, that's probably some baker that does the, you know, the deliveries every day. Every morning, fresh croissant.
Oh, that's probably a good point.
Yeah. Out on the promenade, Jake runs into Nog, who is quite firm in his belief that he did not belong in the school, and that school is a waste of time for a Ferengi, because there is no profit in it. Nog stomps away after calling Jake a stupid human.
That wasn't very nice.
No, but, you know, it's... They are like 13, 14 years old. They're going to fight. And then
stupid human.
Stupid human. That's going to be fixed in no time.
Yes.
Back in Quarks, Zek salutes Nava for taking over the Archibyte mining refineries in the Clarius systems. However, he points out that the reputation of the Ferengi is making it more and more difficult to do business in the Alpha Quadrant, and that in the Gamma Quadrant, their word could be their bond until they choose to break it. Well, I guess, the reputation of the Ferengi precedes them. Unfortunately for them.
In the Gamma Quadrant, nobody knows not to trust them. Yet.
Well, that's not going to take long, I think, but let's see. Zek declines to lead the venture, claiming that he's just not as greedy as he used to be, and informs the group that the new Grand Nagus is Quark.
What?
Surprise!
Not a chance. That is mad.
Yes.
Everybody loved it. It was nice to see. It was nice to see how much everyone supported it, Quark, at that moment. It was great. It was nice.
It's interesting how Ferengi celebrate other people's successes by chucking chairs around and walking out. It must be a cultural thing.
Yeah, it is.
The other Ferengi complain loudly and storm out of the bar while Zek congratulates Quark on his new job, commenting that he's sure he will do great. Quark laughs in disbelief. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe it either.
No, I don't think so. No.
Yes, head well and truly exploded by this point.
We're on Act 3. At breakfast in their quarters, Sisko and Jack discuss Nog being pulled out of school. Jack points out that Nog can't even read and that school wasn't going to be as much fun without him. To Sisko's comment that they could still get together after school, Jack expresses his worry that Nog no longer wants to be his friend, because Ferengi and humans don't get along. Sisko agrees, noting that human and Ferengi values are very different, and suggests playing some baseball after school. But Jack insists that he has something else to do. Ta-da! Teenagers.
Yeah, he's growing up. That's the problem.
Yeah. We all wish we could keep them as small child, but that's never going to happen.
No, because they keep eating so much.
I was going to say, are you sure we want to keep them?
Yeah. On the promenade, Grand Nagus Quark and his brother are walking along when Graal approaches Quark and formally introduces himself as Quark's new best friend, but in ominous tones. Graal suggests that he will protect Quark if he would be grateful enough to allow Graal to speak of the more profitable opportunities in the Gamma Quadrant. Though Graal is outwardly polite and respectful, his demeanor suggests to Quark it is more like a threat than an offer.
It's a protection racket, isn't it?
Yeah, basically, yes. Yes.
It's like insurance. You know, you pay like State Farm or somebody insurance. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's the good old methods used, by the mafia or stuff like that. So,
yeah, if you give me the good pickings, I won't kill you. Sounds fair
insurance,
to me.
Insurance, yeah.
Yeah, insurance. Yeah. In Rom's quarters, Zek is trying to figure out where to take his retirement, either Ryza or Balozny 6, as he hasn't taken a vacation in 85 years. Oh, my God.
Feels like that at the moment here.
Can't even stand not taking a vacation for 3 weeks. Quark bursts in and asks Zek what he should do, since Graal just seemed to threaten his life. Zek points out that more threats would follow, and that to survive, Quark must surround himself with loyal men, but not too loyal, and that he should be ruthless. Then, without warning, Zek's head slumps onto his chest. Meardieu checks him, but he's already dead. Dun dun dun. And I like that Quark looks around and says, "It was not me."
That is funny.
Yeah.
Well, funny might not be the right word, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, it was funny as in the
it was amusing that he immediately get yeah, that Quark immediately freaks out that way. I think that's funny.
Yeah.
Later on, at a private funeral service held at Quark's, Crax is selling small discs with powder, Zex vacuum desiccated remains, each for 20 bars of latinum. That's nice. make a profit of everything. Those Ferengis.
Everything's money.
Yeah, I guess.
Do they carry around the machine that will vacuum desiccate
probably
a body's remains?
It might have come with Grand Nagus on the ship that they arrived in.
Or just on the off chance he might croak it while he's there.
I mean, did you look at him?
yeah, true.
Yeah, okay, he was a bit wrinkled, maybe.
Yeah.
But to be fair, that's probably Wallace Shawn more than it was the prosthetics he was wearing.
Ouch.
Oh, boy. Quark asks Rom to be his bodyguard because Rom is his closest associate, friend, and brother. Rom expresses his dismay, hoping that he could take over the bar. Quark bursts into laughter at this until interrupted by Odo, who has questions to ask. Crax explains that his father died from a massive infection of the tympanic membrane, a chronic condition. Odo wants to have Dr. Bashir examine the body, but of course the body has already been vacuum desiccated for sale.
So that's also known as the eardrum, in case you care.
In your ear?
Ah, of course, yes.
So that's very convenient, this this vacuum desiccator, to make every single proof disappear.
I don't suppose that Frangi are particularly concerned about the reasons why someone dies, because a lot of the reasons for a particular person's death are likely to be questionable and therefore shouldn't be investigated too hard.
Yeah. And then there's the inheritance and the power and the money they accumulated that needs to be redistributed. So investigating the cause of death could delay that redistribution. So I understand
right.
Why they would.
Like a very tyrannical hierarchy. I don't think I'd like to be in that hierarchy.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't seem very very nice. This we take the Ferengis for some. I was going to say stupid. They're not stupid, but some basic people. But their hierarchy, it seems like the Mirror Universe, where everyone is ready to stab you in the back if they can make a profit out of it.
But this is the thing. I mean, you started off by saying about not wanting to live in a tyrannical society like the Ferengi is demonstrating to us. But when you're a part of that society, it's part of the norm. We're looking at it from the outside, where it is vastly different from how live and how we operate. I can't remember whether it was DS9 or whether it was season one of TNG, when it was like a treasure hunt and they were hunting an individual. And the individual was saying, I have to do this because this is who I am. This is what I was bred for. This is why I was born. This is my purpose, is to be hunted down and captured and killed by these individuals that are chasing me.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at it from the outside and thinking, that is utterly, utterly abhorrent. But to them, it's like, this is right. This is what it is.
It was in Deep Space Nine. It was Tusk.
Right.
O'Brien, the softy, took him in.
Yeah. Out on the promenade, Jake and Nog are sitting by their usual railing, but neither says a word. They both try to speak for a moment before the silence descends again. Jake suggests that humans and Ferengi don't have much to talk about, but notes that they always had stuff to talk about previously. They agree to continue to be friends, despite the fact that it won't please either of their fathers. Well, I guess that's a good point. That's a positive. You know, let's be friends. That's going to, make our father mad.
It works sometimes.
14-year-old boys.
The funeral continues in Quark's, where Odo questions Quark about his new status. Quark offers his staff to be kissed by Odo, who grunts at it before leaving. A coin rolls across the floor and Quark steps on it, glancing around to ensure that nobody is watching him, bends over to pick it up, when something zips by overhead and explodes against the wall behind him. An obvious assassination attempt.
Da-dum. Now, this little floaty thing, you could see it floating behind him as he was when he was doing his whole looking around to see if anybody had noticed. And I'm sorry, it was so obvious that whatever it was suspended by a string on a pole.
Come on.
Yeah, you do the best you can with what you got.
It's 1992.
Three, I think.
Something like that.
Mm.
Three, I think. It's season one, so 93.
Yeah.
94. Maybe 94.
No, I don't think so.
Thereabouts.
Yeah. It's early 90s.
Yes.
I was still using my Commodore Amiga at the time. I knew that much.
Yeah. So, see? You couldn't do 3D graphics on a Commodore Amiga.
So. I beg to differ.
Yeah, you... Yeah.
Well, I think you could do 3D graphics on any graphics-capable computer, even a Spectrum.
But then, could you do some special effects for the television with that? Probably not.
The Amiga, yeah. They're doing a video toaster, all that stuff. They did special effects with the Amiga.
Well, we are now on Act 4. In Quark's, O'Brien, Odo, and Sisko investigate the explosion, and O'Brien points out traces of argyne and sodium, a sign of a Ferengi explosive. He notes that it appears to be a Ferengi locator bomb designed to lock onto a target's body odor. If Quark hadn't bent over at the last minute, he would have been fried.
Gee. Nice.
It's amazing how they can detect that it's a Ferengi explosive just by the components. I mean, if I was going to blow someone up, I would probably try and use components from another culture or another group, just, you know, to
point the finger elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Mm. Yeah, that does seem to be slightly illogical, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
They're items that you would typically find in a Ferengi explosive, therefore it must be Ferengi.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's a bit... It's a quick conclusion.
Yeah.
Outside the bar, Bashir informs Sisko that Quark is fine, but a bit shaken up. As they head to the infirmary, Sisko spots his son and Nog running along the upper level and laughing together.
Ooh. Have that, Sisko.
Yeah. In the infirmary, Odo questions Quark, who tries to hide his fear behind his position as Grand Nagus. Sisko informs Quark that the next time he might not be so lucky. But Quark blows off his concern, although admitting that Krax would benefit most from his death. Rom brings up Graal's threat, but Quark notes that neither could have set off the explosive, both being at the funeral along with all of the other Ferengi. Odo notes that Meyardu is absent and recalls the devotion of his species to their employers.
Slight plot point there.
Uh-huh.
It was a locator bomb, so nobody needed to have been there. In order for the explosive to be set off.
Exactly. It could have just sat there until Quark got in range. So
yeah.
I'm still bothered that it couldn't go down and hit him. It just like beamed across. It didn't think to stop and check before it hit a wall.
Momentum.
I guess that was it. Maybe the string just had it, was in the way.
Yeah. They didn't think about a mechanism to make it go down, maybe. Back in Sisko's quarter, Jack is preparing to leave for school when Sisko questions him on his whereabouts the previous night, as he returned home after midnight. Jack responds that he was with Nog, not doing anything wrong, but that it's private. Sisko tells Jack that he wants him home in time for dinner. So, a 14-year-old... comes home after midnight. No.
I did that once and got grounded.
You let your child come home after midnight?
No, no. I did that once. I was the 14-year-old who stayed out beyond midnight.
But you called them on your cell phone, so it was fine.
Didn't think cell phones existed when I was 14 years old.
There's also the fact that Jake responds that he's doing stuff with Nog, but that's private. I mean, You're a 14-year-old kid. There's nothing private. Just tell me what you were doing.
With hindsight, it makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Because we find out later what he was doing. But you're absolutely right. When somebody, you know, a parent asks their child, what were you doing? I can't tell you. It's private. You're like, you will tell me now.
Yeah. Nothing private. Oh, you will see your private room for a week.
Well, I'm responsible for you. You will tell me where you're going.
Well, you live under this roof, and I pay for your food and your clothing and everything. You're mine. In Quark's quarters, Nava is telling Quark that he wishes to find profit in a new field, introducing Synthale to the Gamma Quadrant. Quark points out that Nava was not pleased on Quark's ascension, nor did he congratulate him at the first time, but still wants this opportunity. Nava suggests a 50-50 split on the profits, so Quark grants him the opportunity. I mean, of course, there's a profit, so there we go. Quark, tired after all of his work, heads to his bar to count the day's take and leaves Krax and Rom behind. They note that he's going to become very popular with the way he's handing out such good opportunities, so they need a new plan to kill him, one that could not fail. Ta-da-da! Now we know.
That confirmed what I already suspected.
Oh, you suspected? I didn't suspect
it. I did, yeah. Take away the fact that a Ferengi is not to be trusted. That's kind of it's not exactly a yardstick, is it? But I don't know. The fact that Rom and Krax were physically closest to Quark for the majority of the lead up to where we are now, it does make me think they were being a little bit too fawning. They're being a bit too yes, Grand Nagus, no, Grand Nagus, for me to think that, you know, they couldn't be involved. So yeah, surely it was them.
They were suspicious because they were behaving nicely.
How un-Ferengi can you get?
Exactly.
Sisko sits alone in his quarter at the dinner table, dinner for two cooling. Dax enters and mentions that she was going to inquire as to whether he would be interested in a round of Jokarian chess, but that Sisko is obviously otherwise occupied with his dinner of aubergines too.
A phrase entered my head at that exact moment. And I thought about Odo for a moment, and we don't know about Odo in his natural state and what he looks like in his bucket, okay? Aubergine noir stew.
Sounds fancy.
No.
It's the only thing that came to my head, and I couldn't get rid of it during the entirety of that scene, particularly at the end of the scene when Jadzia does what she does. And I'm like, that is a bucket of aubergine noir stew.
No, no, you can't. You can't go there. No. Now I have the image in my head. Oh, thank you.
Oh, dear.
Sisko says that he has been waiting for half an hour for Jake, but that he hadn't made an appearance as yet since he was with Nog. Dax suggests that he have a talk with Jake to set boundaries, having been a mother three times and a father twice, but not that she was not particularly successful with any of them.
That took a moment to go around in my head.
Sisko decides to go find Jake and bring him home to eat, and finds out from the computer that he's in one of the cargo bays. He thanks Dax and heads out, while Dax takes a plate of the stew to eat.
Of Odo.
Of Odo, yes. Oh my. Sisko heads to the cargo bay, not stopping by anything. In the poorly lit cargo bay, he hears Nog and Jake's voices from ahead and quietly makes his way through the stored materials. When he sees Jake and Nog, he stops and watches as Jake teaches Nog to read from a pad. Sisko watches the two quietly. I was not expecting that.
No.
I think
not at all.
He wasn't either.
No. It was really heartwarming to see how Sisko's manner went from one of determination to one of admiration. Once he worked out what Jake was... Yeah, absolutely. Once he worked out what Jake was doing, yeah. That must be something. He must have been so proud.
Yeah. In Quark's quarter, Rom is helping Quark finish dressing, but seems distracted. Quark says that he's looking forward to traveling through the wormhole to the Gamma Quadrant to Stacroron 2 to negotiate for Mizinite ore. Yeah, why not? Negotiations that Zek had previously started, despite Quark not knowing about Zek's prior visit. Rom comments upon Quark having so much and he so little, and that maybe Quark could let him have the bar, but Quark states that's how things are meant to be. Quark and Rom head out and meet with Krax. Quark suggests bringing a Dabo girl along for the appearance, but Krax compliments Quark by pointing out that he's so imposing he won't need one.
That's what I'm talking about. He's being so complimentary and polite. It's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. As they arrive at the airlock for the Ferengi ship, Krax steps aside and lets Quark make a regular entrance into the airlock, only to find that there's no ship, only space through the window, and that the airlock door is sliding shut behind him with Rom and Krax on the other side. Oh my god, what's going on? Well, we do know. He just discovers. Yeah, I worked on my acting a little bit, you know.
Chops.
Just in case they need someone on the next Star Trek. You know, Star Trek Switzerland. I don't know, maybe. What,
when you need an extra?
Yeah, could be an extra, yeah.
Yeah. You're probably going to wear a red shirt and it'll probably be an ensign, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
as commander.
It's funny, they don't have a lot of captain extras. I don't know why. Quark begins to panic, but this only makes Krax smile as he indicates that Quark has been voted out of the office of Grand Nagus. Rom also seems to be quite ready to open the airlock and rename the bar to Rom's, saying it's a nice name for a bar. I don't know. I like Quarks. Quarks. Rom's. It doesn't have the same oomph.
There's always room at Rom's. Yeah, we could say that, you know.
Yeah,
room at Rom's.
Yeah,
yes.
I guess you can do stuff like that, yeah.
Like Cheers, where everybody knows your name.
Yeah, Cheers. Just as they are about to release the outer airlock door, a voice from down the corridor says, "Release him!"
That was really good.
Thank you. It is Zek, still alive, standing there with Mardu, this guy, and Odo. Both Krax and Rom are stunned, and Odo lets Quark out of the airlock.
Now, that's misleading. That's a misleading statement in the review. Because Rom was trying to let Quark out of the airlock.
Was he? He was trying to open the airlocks to ship
precisely.
Him.
So Rom was trying to get him out of the airlock. Odo lets him out of the airlock. It's like Odo just went, you know what? Off you go.
Oops. Wrong button. Sorry.
Wrong button. They were that far apart.
Yeah. It's really... The UI on this airlock is really bad.
I know. The blow the airlock button was big and red and flashing, and the one that said open the inner door was like this little tiny little rectangular thing.
It is Cardassian engineering. I'm sure they don't have the same kind of safety constraints that they have in the Federation.
True.
But if that was the case, you wouldn't have had to close the inner door before the outer one would open.
Probably. Zek explains that he had entered a Dolbargi sleeping trance taught to him by Mayardu to test Krax and see if he would be a worthy successor. However, despite the attempt by Krax to grab power, he is disappointed because you don't grab power. You accumulate it quietly without anyone noticing. And that Krax was the key and a prime location to quietly gather information on the Gamma Quadrant from those who passed through. It was a trap.
It was a trap. It was indeed.
goodness. We're going to end this soon, very soon, people. So, yeah, stay with us.
I've got to end this. This is going to be a nightmare.
Well, editing the episode 82 was also a nightmare, you know. But it was great. It was a great episode, and it was a great recording, but turning that into a decent podcast was a hard work.
Tangents, every time.
I don't know what tangents are. I mean, it's not like I'm doing a tangent now, but...
Well, you kind of are.
Yeah, I am. I know. It was irony. It was...
Irony. Ah, I see.
Ah,
yes.
You see?
It's like bronzy or goldy, but it's made of iron. Yeah, I get it.
Yes.
I stole that. That was a Blackadder joke. I'm sorry.
Ah, okay.
Works for me.
Yeah, me too. Back in the bar, Quark returns Zek's staff, and Zek comments that he had been looking forward to retirement, and before leaving, jokes that he might return and buy the bar next time he passes through. That didn't amuse Quark.
No, he was like, oh! It was like he was the first time that Zek cracked the same joke.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he was so fearful that he was going to lose the bar, because out of everything, even having the Grand Nagus role in front of his face, everything, it's the bar.
Yeah.
It's the most important thing to him.
Absolutely. Quark catches up with Rom and says that he was pleased with Rom's show of treachery and makes him the assistant manager for policy and clientele. The position is just made up. That's the power of being the boss. You can make up positions and, you know, hire anyone you want.
Like you said about the culture, like, to me that sounds awful, but because the way the culture is laid out, Rom gained honor with his brother for trying to kill him.
Yeah.
Huh. Right.
And failing.
Well, that was a disappointment, clearly.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, what?
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I think that's the point. No one knows. Because
yes,
you're
exactly.
Not Ferengi.
Yeah.
You're not Ferengi. You don't understand the culture. I don't understand the culture.
You need to be Ferengi to understand the Ferengis.
Totally. Totally. And to be proud that someone almost killed you, almost succeeded in killing you.
Well, I guess the key point is in almost.
I mean, I would be irritated.
So, irritated?
If someone tried to kill me, I mean, it has happened to me before where someone tried to kill me. I was very irritated by that experience.
Yeah, understandable.
See, irritated isn't the kind of emotion that I would feel.
Well, they're just doing their job, and so I don't really fault them too much.
Oh, no, that is totally fair. That is totally fair, as was Rom,
right?
In a fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For different reasons.
Yes. Out on the promenade, Jack and Nog agree to meet up again at the end of Jack's next school day. Sisko steps out of the replimat and calls Jack over to give him a hug and a kiss on the head before sending him off to spend time with Nog.
My eyes leaked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In public, I mean, you don't hug your 14-year-old in public.
No, no.
Unless you want to embarrass them, of course.
Oh, yeah, well, totally. If you think about everything that happened up to that point, that must have been quite a shock to Jake. Why would my dad, who had been on at me for the entire episode, obviously wouldn't talk about the entire episode, but throughout the entire episode about, you know, not being friends with Nog and not coming home before midnight and all the rest of it, suddenly give such a public display of affection at that point, unless he had an inkling that Sisko had actually found him.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. He understood. He thought, oh, he knows.
Hmm. That's what I thought at that moment, that Jake knew. Jake knew.
Yeah. Jake is clever. I mean, he's going to end up being a very capable journalist. So he's a clever guy. Well, we've reached the end of the review. Yoo-hoo!
Yay!
Oops. Oh, I'm going to be told off.
That sounded like yoo-hoo to me.
Yeah, kind of. That's why.
Yeah.
I now fear the wrath of
Of Lainey.
I have some thoughts and comments about this episode.
Mm-hmm. Well,
some things that
all that thought.
Okay,
Nate, what did you think about this episode?
Well, so there are four things that like kind of stuck out at me that just kind of bothered me. I took notes, just you know, not.
I did wonder.
Well, I thought one, like right off, I thought it was really odd that the Negus hands out territories for economic conquest. Like that to me just seemed like a very strange thing for Ferengis. My understanding of the Ferengi before this episode was that it's supposed to be like a free market, like the worst traits of a free market capitalist society, like without any rules of decency, basically. And so I just think that's interesting that they would have. They would have to go to the Negus, a central power, to hand out these economic territories or whatever. Like how do they bid for that? And the process on top of that, the process for bidding just seemed a little bit weird because I mean how what is a system for keeping track of what territories and so forth? That was my first issue.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, like so the Negus is supposed to be the highest power in the Ferengi hierarchy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then it seems like that'd be an elected position, or if not elected, at least earned with some sort of an acquisition process. I mean, don't you think like you would have, you know, like a CEO of a company, they don't just pull just some bar owner to be the CEO of a company. You would have somebody that has, you know, got stock in the company or has invested, you know, into the hierarchy, right? So it just seems odd that Quark would have been chosen. Obviously, we understood why, but that it just seems like you would have some sort of a thing like that. I guess maybe the Negus did point out that Quark did was he had foresight that this would be a great, you know, the gateway to the Gamma Quadrant. So I guess that may be a thing. Also, was it odd that there wasn't a bigger security presence around the Negus to begin with? Like, why was it so minimal? You'd think somebody with such prestige or power or you know, the leader of an entire species would have, you know, more of a secret service type around them. You'd think, mm-hmm. you know, and also, and lastly, all those deals that the Quark made while he was Negus, are they still valid under the actual Negus?
That's a very good question.
So anyway, this is just my thoughts.
Yeah, because he was Negus for maybe not a few days, but a few hours, and he made some decisions. So true, although. I was going to say it was Negus because the previous Negus died, but no. So he was legally Negus.
Right. I just find that interesting.
I've got a fifth question to add to that. What if Quark refused to give away the position and says, well, screw you, I'm Negus now?
Yeah, I don't know how that works. That's a good question. How does that... That process of the mantle of authority transitioning didn't seem like it was really properly fleshed out. It was just like a statement. Yeah. A little pomp and circumstance.
Yes.
Right. So you would expect there to be a process, a ceremony or whatever to pass the mantle over.
Yeah.
Didn't have that opportunity because Zek died before that was able to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But because he had announced his successor... Presumably, from that point, it doesn't matter what happened to Zek. So, yeah. I suppose, legitimately, Quark could have said, sorry, you're not having it back. But that wouldn't have been in Quark's nature, because Quark is ultimately a coward. So he would have taken the easy option out at the first opportunity.
Right.
Someone comes back and he's like, phew, here you go.
Yeah. Yes,
but it is a good question to ask, though. What would have happened if he hadn't?
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. So, Dave, what did you think of about this episode?
I absolutely adored it. I think it was brilliant, just for comedic value alone. The whole thing with Quark, and it's really nice to have an episode that focuses almost entirely on Quark and Quark's. Well, lack of ethics. The episode started talking about ethics and then, you know, he doesn't have any. But I think we had a really nice insight into what kind of a character Quark really is. That maybe he's not quite as invested into the Ferengi way as you might actually think he should be.
That's a good point.
There's no way on life he would have survived as the Grand Nagus, because I don't think he would have been ruthless enough. I said it earlier, he is ultimately a coward. He will put himself into a situation until he then feels out of his depth, and then he will run away. That's not Ferengi.
Yeah.
But I thought the episode was brilliant. It had a really nice combination of the whole comedic element of Zek and Quark, but then behind it all, you have this continuing arc of the relationship between Jake and Benjamin, the relationship between Jake and Nog. And I don't know, I think the most important takeaway from this was actually the revelation for Benjamin that Jake and Nog could actually be good for each other as friends. Obviously, we have no necessary evidence of this. We don't know whether this is actually the case or not, because we haven't encountered the after effect of this interaction between Jake and Nog. But knowing that Jake and Nog's friendship goes well into the future,
yes,
throughout the entirety of their time on DS9, it seems to me a pivotal point, a crossroads in Benjamin's acceptance of their friendship. And believe it or not, I got more out of that out of the episode than I did the A-plot.
Yeah, I think it also did yes. It did bring to light the maturity of Jake Sisko as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, he's a 14-year-old, but he's... I mean, there's probably not a lot of 14-year-olds on the station, so he's got to take care of himself and of Nog, so I guess that makes them...
Is that not how they found each other in the first place?
Yes, exactly.
Because there was nobody else their age on the station.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, loved it. May not be my favourite episode of the season so far, but it's up there with them.
I agree with everything you've said, both of you, so I don't have a lot to add. I like this episode. It's one of those that I rewatch with pleasure. It's, as you said, it's both funny and there's this deep story between Jack Nog and also Jack and Sisko. Yeah, one of those character building episodes again, both for Quark and for Jack Nog.
Mm.
So yeah, I liked it. I was delighted that we were going to review this one. Made me forget about the Alamarine song for a while.
Oh, man.
Well, one other thing. I think the Nagus character, he is a great character, that reoccurring character for the series. And I love what they do with the Nagus over time.
Yeah, he's coming back. Right. So are we picking some trivia from the book? Or the books, I should say. Because I have volume 2.
I have Deep Space Nine open.
Yeah, me too. I have the page open on Quark. I'm going to start with a question. Nate, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Hand on the buzzer. True or false? Quark once won more than 200 games of Tongo in a row.
False. Seems too good for him.
Seems too good for him. I need to actually go and see the answer, because I don't know the answer to that. Answers. So it's true. It is true. Dave, you have one trivia for our guest.
One of Quark's dreams was to acquire his own what? Is it Marauder, space station, moon, or planet?
I don't know that one, but planet.
I was going to say moon.
It was moon.
Ah, oh, man. I'm 0-2.
What did the Intendant do to the Mirror Universe Quark? A. Married him. B. Killed him. C. Worked for him. D. Bribed him to kill Sisko.
Kill them.
Yes. Very good.
1 for 3.
Dev, do you have a last one?
Yeah, let's go with O'Brien. This is a good one. O'Brien's father hoped that Miles would attend the Aldebaran Music Academy to study what instrument? Trombone, piano, cello, or violin?
I think it was a piano, wasn't it?
1 for 4. It was the cello.
I was going to say trombone, so I would have that. I've had that wrong too. Okay. That was nice.
That's a bit of fun.
All right. So if none of you has anything to add, and I guess it's time to end this review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1 Episode 11, The Nagus. Thanks to all of you for listening to our show. You can help us spread the love for this podcast by placing multiple USB sticks preloaded with our entire back catalog of shows into every bucket of aubergine stew you find. Or if you think performing the Heimlich maneuver on the commander of your local space station would be a little overwhelming, you can simply share the address of our website on social media.
No. I wrote that, and I still can't visualize it. And you can find our website at tlgreyhot.org, where you can find our show notes, our reviews, and you can also, at the bottom of every episode, there's a little comment box. You can put some feedback in there.
Absolutely. Or if you want to use an antiquated mean of communication, you can send us an email at feedback@tlgreyhot.org. And in case you wouldn't want to be associated with this show, and we would understand completely, you could just tell us that, and we will never, ever, ever read your name on the podcast.
But you don't have a P.O. box in Anaheim, California or something like that? You should.
Oh, yeah. Well, we could do that, I guess.
Okay. We'll get that done for next week.
Yeah.
It's interesting you say that if you don't want to be associated with the podcast. I mean, we don't have a choice, so I don't see why anybody else should.
We don't, yeah.
Mm. And, of course, we are on Twitter and Facebook. Our username on both of those services is TEGHpodcast. Plus, we're also on Telegram at t.me/TEGHpodcast, which is the only place you will get notification of our live stream as and when it goes live.
Yes, which is no longer unlisted.
It's also no longer on YouTube.
No.
Well, for now, at least.
That's true.
Well, that's why you need to be in there, because we change it every week or so. So, yeah, it could be anywhere.
It could be anywhere. Next week, it could be on TikTok, on Facebook Live. Who knows?
TikTok.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to Memory Alpha. As always, we have copied our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license.
We have had to modify it because they left a letter out.
I did change a sentence or two.
Ah, right, fair enough. So it is a derived work.
Yes.
The rest of this show is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution share alike license. There is a page on our website, apparently, with full details of exactly what that means.
Yes, there is a page somewhere deep.
Isn't there?
Down.
You have to look for it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to work. You need to do some work. We're not going to serve you everything on a plate. Something
is it? Is it next to the answers to the 7 questions?
Yes, right. The same space, same place,
same space. Yeah, excellent.
This podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. Check out our website at otherside.network for our fine, current and returning shows.
Awesome. Our next episode will be our review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1 Episode 12, Vortex.
And should you want to be a guest on that particular show, like Nate this week, John last week, Monica 4 weeks ago, Ro, and so on, the list is getting longer and longer, just get in touch with us and we will have you on the show.
And just for the record, what made the biggest surprise for me on this episode is that I didn't know Nate was going to be on the show this evening. So I got the pleasure and the excitement of having Nate suddenly turn up on my screen to help us review this show. So that is awesome.
We decided that live last week, so you were there.
I do what I can to, you know, throw things off as much as possible.
Well, normally we talk about it before the episode because, you know, I've slept at least 6 times since then.
That's true. That's no. That you're perfectly right. Anyway, if you want to be on the show and don't want Dave to know, just contact me. Or if you don't want me to know, just contact Dave. Or if you don't want any one of us to know, just show up. And
just turn up, yeah.
Yeah, we'll manage something. Thank you, Nate, for joining us this week.
You're welcome. It was fun.
It was great to have you back.
I have to do it again.
Thank you, Dave, for joining us once again.
Of course, yeah.
And yes, Nate, we're going to have you back at least once for the Deep Space Nine extravaganza when we reach episode 20-something.
I think it is episode 20, isn't it?
20, maybe. But maybe before that and surely after that. Well, that's it for this week's episode. We will be back next week with a whole bunch more Star Trek. In the meantime, take care of yourself, wash your hands, get your vaccines, wear your masks, and, well, in just one word, see you next week. Ciao, ciao.
Aubergine stew.
See yous.
Aubergine stew. Crax demands the use of a holosuit. Suit? Yes, a holosuit, because he wants to be very clean.
O'Brien's father helped... No, let me try that again, but this time in English. Stop trying to ad-lib, you muppet.
In Quarks, Quark and Crax watch the holosuit's suit. One day I will say that word correctly. Last paragraph. We're almost done.
Let's see if we can get through it.
Knock on wood.
In just one word, see you next week.
Oh, yeah,
I know. Yannick. I was like, I was clutching at straws. English is very hard sometimes.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at othersidenetwork.com.